Full day of sports here on ESPN. First Take starts in an hour. That's followed by SportsCenter, NFL Live, The Jump. Then at 4, it's 20 minutes each of Jalen and Jacoby, highly questionable and around the horn. A two-hour SportsCenter comes your way at 5. The PTI guys join at 5:30 and cap your day with SportsCenter with SVP. It's all coming your way today here on ESPN. Meanwhile, on the other side of planet Earth, Carl Ravitch and Eduardo Perez have their own cheer songs from the Korea Baseball Association. Here's Ravi's.
Kalabichi, Rabichi, na 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 na. Kalabichi, Rabichi, na 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 na. Kalabichi, Rabichi, na 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 na. ESPN, we are redo you.
Look at Ravi's loving it. Eduardo Perez is loving it. Jalen and Jay Will. Now, you guys think you're such big stars. Do you have your own songs? And the Korea Baseball Association, that's what I ask of you. We'll bring those two guys in live here in a second. That's a lot of fun. Look, we're bringing you all the sports we possibly can here, and it's starting to heat up here in this country. This summer is going to be jam-packed if things continue at the rate they're going. And that's what I can tell you about this coming hour. Let's go. Roll the open. Time to get up with high-profile players feeling down. Max is mad, and he's not going to take it anymore. We'll tell you why he is ready to blow up the baseball season. Then, the man on the hottest seat in the NFL explains how he's going to handle everything in time to stave off disaster in Big D. And our general manager tells you why one young star quarterback is flat out playing for his job. All that and more in this hour of Get Up, which starts right now with Get Up and Go. Around the world of sports, our Jackie McMullen reporting the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame has postponed the enshrinement ceremonies for the class of 2020 from late August to the spring of next year. The star-studded class headlined by Kevin Garnett, Tim Duncan, and Kobe Bryant. Meanwhile, NFL owners will no longer vote this week on two rule proposals that would have established sky judge officials for the 2020 season. The earliest that vote would now take place on adding the sky judge would be for the 2021 year. The Baseball Players Association is expected today to counter Major League Baseball's economic proposal with a plan that calls for more than 100 games and a guarantee of full prorated salaries for the upcoming season. This when one of their highest profile players, Max Scherzer, who's a member of the 8-player executive subcommittee, issued this very strong statement on Twitter last night saying, after discussing the latest developments with the rest of the players, there's no reason to engage with MLB in any further compensation reductions. We have previously negotiated a pay cut in the version of prorated salaries, and there's no justification to accept a second pay cut based upon the current information the union has received. I'm glad to hear other players voicing the same viewpoint and believe Major League Baseball's economic strategy would completely change if all documentation were to become public information. We'll go deeply into that in about a half hour here on Get Up. Meanwhile, All-Star Damian Lillard. You might have heard it earlier this week. He told Yahoo Sports that he would not return to play unless the schedule gave the Blazers a legitimate chance at competing for the postseason. That created a lot of conversation. Yesterday, Dame Lillard appeared on Jalen and Jacoby to clear it up.
I was just saying, you know, we've been off for 2 months, and if we come back, we want to play for something. You know what I mean? So after this type of break, usually when you come back, you know, especially with how fast we're going to be jumping into playing, you know, I think guys are at risk for injury, also at risk of, you know, being exposed to whatever because, you know, none of us have been around each other. If so many teams are going to be in one spot. So, I mean, if we're going to do it, obviously as players, we want to play, but we want to play for something, especially if we were in position to play for that in the first place. So I feel like a play-in tournament would be perfect.
Here they are, Jay Will and Jalen Rose with us here. Jalen, that was on your show. Really good interview, I thought. And I just wonder, after Dame Lillard said what he initially said, there were a lot of takes being thrown around. How did what he said on your show yesterday influence the way you think about his position here?
It totally made sense, and I appreciate him being a straight shooter and being honest. And like we clarified on this show, Greeny, it's not like what you're seeing with Major League Baseball. He wasn't talking about a conflict with money because NBA players already have taken a pay cut. So that's not the issue. The issue is if you're going to get teams, in particular those that were outside of the playoff race, and that's teams 16 and beyond, at least until 20, you have to incentivize those squads from ownership down to make them want to not only bring their teams, but to bring their top players like Dame Lillard to a bubble setting in Orlando, and you want them to feel like they have an opportunity to play for something great.
What do you think, Jay? Well, how do you think they should handle this thing here? If you were the commissioner, how would you handle it?
Well, I'm happy I'm not Adam Silver, to be frank with you. His job is a little bit arduous. But I would say, you know, that's one side of the coin to look at it as it relates to Dame. And I respect Dame, and I get that if I were a player. I think also the opposite side of that, if you're the business of the NBA, the revenue that you've lost as a company has been pretty drastic. If that's, you have responsibilities to media networks, you have brand sponsorship deals that you need to activate so you can capitalize on that. And I also think you're trying to extend the runway of engagement and increase the excitement of the game as much as possible before you even get to the playoff to help recoup that. And the one thing I will say, Dame is entitled to his opinion because Dame makes a lot of money per year. He can do that even with the salary reduction, but you have a lot of guys who don't make that type of money and a lot of guys who are coming into the league. And this is big for the league as in general, so they don't have to go back and potentially redo whatever the CBA could be next year due to incredible revenue loss. So it's on that side of the equation with the league. They're trying to extend that runway as long as possible.
Let me just make sure I understand what you're saying, though, Jay. Well, if what they decide to do ultimately, I don't know what they're going to do, but if they decide to bring back all of the teams to do some of the stuff you're talking about, including those who have no chance at making the playoffs, the Warriors, the Knicks, et cetera, would you want to play if you're one of those guys?
If that meant that I was going to have a future in this game, it's not an easy decision, Greeny. There's a lot. There are going to be things with our job that I may feel uncomfortable doing that I may have to do because you need to have a job, right? So, like I said, certain guys can take stances on it due to the incredible amounts of money they make. But there is that next tier of guys that may feel like they will have to do that or they will want to do that in order to maintain the job. I mean, there are two sides to look at it.
I totally get that. Jalen, I know that you're I've actually named now the 20-team model, the Jalen Rose model, because you were the first person that I heard say it. But I heard Mark Cuban saying on TV the other day, like, all of these teams have local cable deals. They want to put games on there. So if they wanted to bring back the Warriors and the Knicks and all these other teams, I don't mean to just single them out, but they jump to mind, teams that technically have nothing to play for, are you good with that?
That doesn't make sense, Greeny. And the answer to the question that you gave Jay is actually no. Jay Will, teams 21 through 30, they're not growing the game this season. Don't anticipate the Golden State Warriors putting their lottery team on a plane going from California to Florida under any circumstances. And we don't want to watch them play either. That's why I said 20 teams, because it engages more than just the 16 that were in the playoffs. You involve four more teams plus fan bases, and that becomes your incubator of 20 teams that now you can either use to do a play-in tournament or have all of those squads be playoff teams. This all is determined by how much time you have to start back up the season.
That's fine if you want to say 20 teams, if that's an arbitrary number that can get you to where you need to be. But I'm sorry, I would love to watch Stephen Curry play if Stephen Curry came back to play. I would love to watch Trae Young play. I can name a lot of players that may not have a playoff chance right out of the gate that not having basketball for the past 2.5 months that I would thoroughly enjoy watching play. A player, individual player driven league and a fan driven league, right? Fans love individual players. Now, I don't know if you're going to break Klay Thompson back. I'm not sure what, you know, Golden State would do, but there are a lot of individual players that are outside the playoff race that I would like to watch play, Jay Rose, if I'm a fan of the game.
Jay Will, I'm going to talk about the examples that you use. Steph Curry will not be playing basketball this season. Steph Curry will not be playing.
He was coming back, Jay Rose, to play at the end of the season. He was coming back to play at the end of the season, Jay Rose. He was coming back to play.
If you to go,
they were going to play for a playoff seat.
Let me answer both of you guys. If you to go and stay Warriors, you're not putting Steph Curry back out on the floor this year under any circumstances.
Wait, time out.
You're firmly entrenched in lottery position. That's what it's going to be. Now, let me answer your question. Trae Young, I'm showing you how each scenario is different. Trae Young, if you're the Atlanta Hawks, you don't want him to be playing in this situation to protect your lottery situation. And lastly, a guy like Karl Anthony Towns, I saw his video. You think he want to get on an airplane after he lost his mama to coronavirus and go play against the Lakers or the Clippers in the first round of the playoffs?
Jalen, let me play devil.
I think that's subjective. I can't speak for what Karl-Anthony Towns would want to do, nor can I speak for Stephen Curry. And I think you're being subjective by doing that. Their opinion will be their opinion on how they handle the issue. All I'm saying is Stephen Curry and Golden State, those guys were same thing. They were trying to get a potential lottery pick, but Stephen Curry was coming back to play. He was coming back to play this year, even though they weren't going to play out for playoff contention. So, Jay Rose, like, it's individual based. And I don't think we can sit up here on TV and say, you think this person, you don't know what that person wants to do because everybody's handling the situation differently.
We're saying two different things. The organizations that basically are between teams 21 and 30 in the race, Greeny, will not want to put their teams on airplanes and fly to Florida to be guinea pigs as the NBA try to gear up getting the other playoff teams ready. They're firmly entrenched in lottery position. If you're the Golden State Warriors, why would you put Steph Curry back out there without no Klay Thompson to get bounced in the first round with the other guys that he played with on the team where he could possibly get hurt? That doesn't even make sense.
Well, I mean, it is.
That's fine, Jay Rose. As long as teams understand that there are major repercussions of revenue that could be lost, that could affect salary caps in years to come.
I would also
You're talking about from the player side. There's also a business component to this whole thing as well, man.
And there's one other piece to this that I'd like to throw into it in the middle of it. This is a pandemic. We have these like once every 100 years. So it is an unusual circumstance, to put it mildly. And I do wonder where the civic responsibility does come. I'm not asking anyone to jeopardize their own health or their own safety or that of their families or anything else. But if there is a way that this indeed can be done in a way that feels safe for all of the people that are involved, then I do wonder if there isn't some level of obligation on the part of people, all of us, to do whatever we can for the greater good. And if coming back and playing basketball and providing a month or so of entertainment for people is a piece of that in exchange for getting paid a whole lot of money, I don't know that that feels like an unreasonable thing to ask. Does that make any sense at all?
It does, Greeny. And I also say this, it wouldn't just be back for the excitement of the fans. There's also a lot of jobs that I think a lot of these guys, by playing and generating all that revenue, are creating for people. And, you know, I also say this, I think sometimes, you know, we get locked into this warp of just, you know, specific relates to, you know, professional athletes. There are people who are going to jobs now every single day are going to jobs. And I'm not, you know, minimizing the risk that everybody feels, but I'm just want to give a reality check. There are people going to jobs every single day where they are having their offices broken down, decontaminated, if somebody catches this, and they are going back to work. So I'm just using that as a frame of reference. Once again, not minimizing how anybody feels about their individual circumstance here, but just recognizing what everyday people are going through. So we are going through this together. This is happening. So I'm with you, Greeny, on that.
Yeah, Jalen, I'm going to be real uninterested in hearing about how one team doesn't want to jeopardize their spot in the lottery in the middle of a pandemic. That's the one part of it, Jalen, that I think I'm not going to want to accept.
Gentlemen, the basic premise of what I'm trying to say is the chapter for teams 21 through 30 this season basically is closed, whether there's a pandemic or not. And here's what I want to also frame for both of you gentlemen. There's a reason why each day you start the show, Greeny, and you thank first responders, you thank firefighters, you thank doctors and nurses. You know why? Because they're heroes, not athletes. That is two different things. And so what ends up happening is we think they should put their health at risk to entertain us and take it personal when some people feel like they don't want to take that chance. If I'm not going to put myself at risk and I feel like I don't want to bring my family to put them in a bubble in a quarantine situation, and I'm an NBA basketball player, that's my prerogative. Yeah. There are people also at jobs and or at careers that work for essential companies that have decided that they didn't want to work. But you know what a lot of people are doing in those situations? They work it because they need to feed their family. NBA basketball players are multimillionaires. The NBA is a multi-billion dollar conglomerate. You can't just think about the next 3 months. You got to think about this thing going on for the next 100 years.
It's a really good conversation, 100 years being the operative frame. Guys, thank you very much for that. We're going to do much more hoops in this hour, so stay close by, and we'll continue talking about it. Meanwhile, as we continue on Get Up, also some football. His quarterback isn't signed. He can't even get in front of his new team. Is Mike McCarthy already feeling the heat in Big D? You'll hear from him. And then Tom Brady and Drew Brees have a handful of NFL records between them, but only one can win the division. Our former NFL corner and Harvard business grad will tell you which one. Next.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Back on Get Up, and let's run the hurry up with our football guys this morning. Dominique Foxworth, who's your favorite in the NFC South?
I think that's easy. You got the Saints, my man Taysom Hill, the fun uncle that they have there in the backup quarterback room. Also, Cam Jordan, a great defense. They added guys like Malcolm Jenkins and Emmanuel Sanders to that already potent offense. So I think the Saints are definitely going to run away with that division.
I like that one. D. Wood, who is your favorite in the AFC South?
I'm going with the Tennessee Titans. We saw last year when they inserted Ryan Tannehill in the starting lineup. This was a new Tennessee Titans offense. Ryan Tannehill, the best quarterback off play action, feeding off of Derrick Henry, the league leading rusher. I love the identity of this team moving forward.
And Mike Tannenbaum, how about the very competitive NFC East? Who you got?
The Philadelphia Eagles. Dan Orlovsky's good friend Carson Wentz, last in the NFL last year in targeting wide receivers 15 yards down the field or more. Philly did a great job. Hopefully DeSean Jackson gets healthy, but they've added Jalen Reagor, first-round pick, trade for Marquise Goodwin. They have a lot of speed on the outside. If they can turn a weakness into a strength, that Philly offense will be unstoppable.
All right, let's talk a little more about that division. Let's talk about their arch rivals, the Cowboys. Who have they and their quarterback, Dak Prescott, continue, I guess, to inch closer to a July 15th deadline for the two sides to work out a deal. But yesterday, speaking with the media, the new coach, Mike McCarthy, says he's confident they'll get it all worked out.
He's involved in a business situation, and I have full confidence that he'll be ready to go. And, you know, there has been communication. You know, this is the way these business situations go sometimes, and you respect that and have all the confidence it'll work out.
Now, Damian Woody, we talked about this a little earlier this morning. As you now join us here for the conversation, it feels to me like if you sort of break it down, there may not be any more pressure on anyone in the league as this season begins than there is on Mike McCarthy in Dallas. How do you see it?
Well, listen, I totally agree, because really the main talking point about the Dallas Cowboys was Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett was basically the fall guy as to why the Cowboys didn't do better under his, you know, tenure as the head coach. Now you bring in a Super Bowl winning head coach in Mike McCarthy. They have all the pieces. They have the quarterback. They have the line. They have all the personnel necessary to make a run. So there's immense pressure on Mike McCarthy, even in his first year, to make the Dallas Cowboys a Super Bowl contending team. And this is not the way you want to start off with your quarterback in a contract dispute with the organization, but I think it's actually overblown as to if it'll have an impact on the Dallas Cowboys during the season.
Why? Why, D. Wood? Why is it overblown? If Dak Prescott isn't there right now, if they get him signed by July 15th, you don't think it has any impact on their year?
No, listen, I think deadlines spur action. We all talk about July 15th. A lot of times things happen. What's the worst case scenario? Dak Prescott signs a franchise tender. We already know that Kellen Moore is the offensive coordinator. They're going to have some semblance of the same system that they ran offensively. Yeah, they got a new defensive coordinator, but much of this personnel is intact with the Dallas Cowboys. So I don't see a lot of turnover. That's what we've been talking about all offseason with these teams dealing with different head coaches, different quarterbacks, that they have to deal with this whole offseason of not being able to be in the building and not working out together. Well, the Dallas Cowboys have pretty much the same personnel, same system. So I'm not as worried as some people think heading into the season for the Dallas Cowboys.
Mike T, how worried do you think Mike McCarthy actually is about the situation with Dak?
He is definitely worried because, again, he can't install attributes of his offense despite Kellen Moore still being there. And my friend D. Wood just contradicted himself. Earlier in the show, he talked about when we had Brett Favre in 2008, it was a work in progress. And the Dallas Cowboy offense is going to be a work in progress until Dak shows up. And I know the virtual offseason is different than the real thing, but talking to coaches around the league, it has been productive. And when Mike McCarthy goes into these virtual meetings and sees Andy Dalton and he sees Amari Cooper and now CeeDee Lamb, and not to see your starting quarterback, it's deflating. And although Andy Dalton is a market upgrade over Cooper Rush, it's still not the best quarterback they have. So I know their concern there. And after July 15th, they could really be on a one-year deal with Dak Prescott.
Nicholas, let me talk to you a little bit. I know how much you love Dak Prescott, but let's put that aside for the moment. It felt like the narrative on the Cowboys was they took a step back this offseason with some of the things that happened. Then they drafted CeeDee Lamb, and the world made them a Super Bowl team. The Cowboys, the allure of that star just continues, I think, to sort of pull us back in all the time. Are the Cowboys, is there reason to believe they're going to be better this year than they were last year?
There's absolutely reason to believe, because I think you're right. Mike McCarthy, as the head coach, will have a lot of pressure on him, but there's a different Mike there, and Mike Nolan, who's the defensive coordinator, who will really have the pressure on him. If he can improve that defense, which was really bad last year, we all know their offense was top in the league. I think third for offensive efficiency behind the Ravens and the Chiefs. So their offense was fine, and we assume that him, that Kellen Moore and Dak Prescott are going to repeat that if the defense can get better. And I think people believe the defense may not get any better because some of their best talent has left. But their best talent left off a defense that was bad. So maybe Mike Nolan's addition can change this defense, put them back on the right path, and the offense can be somewhere close to what they were last year. That's why I believe in them to potentially win that division. That's going to be tight. I won't be surprised, obviously, if the Eagles win. I'd be shocked if either of the other two teams win. But I think the division will be tight, and I'm hoping that Mike Nolan can put them over the top on the defensive side.
D-Wood, quickly, Eagles or Cowboys in the East? Who you got?
I'm going to give it to the Eagles this year. I think the additions that the Eagles made, particularly on offense to surround Carson Wentz, we all know that their wide receiver position at the, going down the stretch was just atrocious. So I think the additions they made there, I think that's going to put the Eagles over the top.
All right, so there's three of us on the Eagles bandwagon in the NFC East. Coming up, our general manager has more news for us today. He'll tell us why this year could be the beginning of the end for number one overall pick in Cleveland. That story's on the way. But first, D. Wood, you're going under the microscope here. This is from Sneaky Hembo, and he's looking at you. Who was the last head coach Baker Mayfield played under for multiple seasons? That's a great question. The answer is next. Get up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Oh, this is a good one. Damian Woody, here we go. Sneaky Hembo asks you, who is the last head coach Baker Mayfield played under for multiple seasons?
I'm going greeny. I'm going with Lincoln Riley here.
Okay, that's an interesting guess. It actually goes back before him. The answer is Bob Stoops. Since 2017, he's played under Lincoln Riley, but just for the 1 year. Then Hugh Jackson, Greg Williams, Freddie Kitchens, and now he has a new head coach. I was actually trying to try and figure out who his high school coach was. So you see, that can be taken a lot of different ways. Much of what has happened there probably is not his fault. But expectations were high last season in Cleveland. No question about it. People were talking, after all the acquisitions they made, about that team for the playoffs or more. Well, it went a disappointing 6-10. The coach, Freddie Kitchens, was fired, replaced now by Kevin Stefanski in January. Odell Beckham, of course, supposed to be a huge part of their offense last year. He scored only 4 touchdowns all season long and averaged a career-low 65 yards per game. And as a result of all this, Baker Mayfield's numbers fell across the board. He threw 21 picks last year, second most in the league. But now the third-year quarterback thinks this coming year is going to be a different story.
I have a different approach to this year. I think it's everybody that has been interviewed in our team has kind of, you know, hit the nail on the head over and over about, you know, it's just time to work. It's time to do our thing instead of talking about it. So this is the first media thing I've done just because there's no need to be talking about it. It's just time to go do it. There's no doubt year three is always a big year in these contracts and timing wise. Everybody knows that, but I'm not going to put any added pressure on myself because if I win, good things will happen. Good things will happen for our team and the guys around me. And that's the most important part. So if I play better, our team's going to do better. So I put that pressure on myself.
Let's focus on that year three piece of this. Okay. So everyone is aware that's where a guy like Mitchell Trubisky is now. And we see the way that situation is playing out in Chicago. So Mike Tannenbaum is our general manager here. How would you describe what is at stake for Baker Mayfield in this, his third season?
Greedy, this is a hugely consequential year for Baker Mayfield. He took a massive step back a year ago, and Cleveland did a remarkably good job in helping him this year. They got two new tackles in Jedrick Willis, signing Jack Conklin. They added Austin Hooper. They have two really good running backs, obviously two dynamic receivers. There are no excuses. And in Kevin Stefanski's offense, two things we know, high completion percentage, low interception rate. So lots of pressure on Baker Mayfield, and if things don't get better, as it has been already discussed today, we could be looking at Mitchell Trubisky. We could even be looking at Josh Rosen, who didn't even make it to his second year in Arizona. New head coach comes in and Cliff Kingsbury. They draft Kyler Murray and they just move on. So this is an enormous year for Baker Mayfield.
Nick, there's a part of me that wants to ask if this is unfair. We just used a trivia question to illustrate the fact that the last time this guy played for the same head coach in consecutive seasons was in college, and it's not even the coach we all remember him with. So is it fair to say that he has really had a chance to show you what he's capable of?
Oh, yeah, it's certainly not fair. But, I mean, the same could be said for a lot of other quarterbacks and a lot of other players who had their careers cut short for many different reasons in this league. Like, you don't always end up in a perfect situation. So this is an imperfect situation. And I think when his story is written, if it turns out that it doesn't pan out the way he wants it to be, we could say it's not fair, but that's not going to change anything. So he needs to step up and play well because this is his best opportunity. And to your point about the third year, that's when you have to choose whether you activate the fifth-year option or not, which is kind of teams deciding whether they want to keep you as their quarterback or move on. And that's where Mitchell Trubisky is right now, where they didn't activate the fifth-year option and they brought in some competition in Nick Foles.
Right. That's the year that guys like Watson and Mahomes are in, and obviously on one side of the conversation, and then a guy like Trubisky, who right now finds himself on the other. Jump in here, D. Wood. What do you think as far as how fair it is to Baker Mayfield to be suggesting if he doesn't play well this year, basically he was a, I don't want to use this word, but a disappointment to say the least as the number one overall pick.
Such is life in the NFL, Greeny. Unfortunately, you know, that's the way it is, because if we go on the flip side, if Baker Mayfield plays well and gets and resurrects this Cleveland Brown organization, then we're going to throw all the adulation in the world on Baker Mayfield. So that's just the nature of the quarterback business. And being the number one pick, you go to a bad team, and the cards are stacked against you. If you somehow make it happen, then you're going to be revered. If not, you're going to be thrown into the scrap heap. That's just the way it is, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, I'm doing this off the top of my head, but I believe in the two seasons before he became their quarterback, they won a combined total of one game. And since he got there, they've won, I want to say, 13 games and tied one. So, I mean, that is progress. It isn't what people have been expecting, but it certainly is a step in the right direction. We'll see. I will come back to this a little bit later because we need to get to the really what was the biggest thing that happened yesterday in the middle of this labor dispute that we have going on in the middle of a pandemic between Major League Baseball and their Players Association. We know that the players are expected to give some sort of counteroffer to the owners at some point this week, perhaps as soon as today, based upon an offer from the owners they found completely insulting. And National star pitcher Max Scherzer, who's a member of the executive subcommittee for the Players Association, issued a very strong statement last night on Twitter. Look what he said. After discussing the latest developments with the rest of the players, there's no reason to engage with MLB in any further compensation reductions. We have previously negotiated a pay cut in the version of prorated salaries, and there's no justification to accept a second pay cut based upon the current information the union has received. I'm glad to hear other players voicing the same viewpoint and believe MLB's economic strategy would completely change if all documentation were to become public information. So, Let me bring Jeff Passan back into the conversation here, as well as Neek, who has a lot of expertise in the area of labor negotiation. But, Jeff, I want to start with you. Strong comments last night from Max Scherzer. What impact do you think that has on the other players?
I think the fact that it's Max Scherzer being the one who's speaking, Greeny, says a lot. This is a guy who's got multiple Cy Young awards, a guy who's got a World Series ring now, a guy who turned down a $144 million contract offer with the Detroit Tigers so he could hit free agency and get $210 million from the Nationals. That's the whole point of this. It's having agency. It's having control of your career. And it feels to the players right now like Major League Baseball is going and trying to play puppeteer with them. And the offer that was made on Tuesday that would have cut the pay of the highest paid players in baseball by a significant amount really did not sit well with the entirety of the player contingency, from the guys who would be making the minimum salary to the guys like Mike Trout all the way at the top.
I get it. And I think that they're probably completely in the right. Dominique, however, and I want to set up your credentials here. You were the NFLPA's president. You were the COO of the NBA Players Association. So you understand how some of this public stuff works. And I'm just envisioning right now a fan sitting at home listening to this and saying, so you're telling me this guy is complaining about the way he's being treated when he has a $210 million contract that they're starting from, and they're going from there in the middle of a pandemic when 25% of the people in the country are losing their jobs. I think that in these labor negotiations, the management side, they count on that, don't they?
Right. They absolutely count on that. And I think that's a surface level view of this. And I understand that. But I think our job, people who are in this business, is to give people the context behind it, how they really should be looking at this. And the way I think of it, Max Scherzer's contract is awesome. But I love what he has done right now, stepping out and giving cover to all the other players. Because while Major League Baseball players' salaries have gone up 40% in the last decade, the franchise values have gone up 300% in the last decade. So if you are asking the players in this moment to participate as if they are owners and give back more money to protect the revenue of the owners or the gains of the owners, I think you should treat them like owners and also let them participate in the benefits. So if you want them to take these pay cuts, go ahead and give them a few percentage of ownership of the team. It's not unheard of for employees of a company to own a portion of the company. So if you want them to take these losses now and experience this like owners, give them a piece of the team and they can experience it like owners going forward.
So Jeff Passan, if I'm a baseball fan and I'm listening to this, all I really want to hear is, are they going to play this year or not? Do you think this sort of drawing lines in the sand is pushing us further away from a baseball season this summer?
Yeah, I do. And there is much more skepticism after the last, 24 to 48 hours about whether there's going to be a baseball season than there was before. I'd like to believe that cooler heads are going to prevail, but cooler heads are going to prevail was the same rhetoric that was spoken in 1994. And we all know what happened that year. We have seen this playbook again and again from owners and from players, both sides digging in and trenching where they are and saying they're not going to move off of that. At some point, whoever wants the season the most is going to have to move off of that. And I don't know if that's going to be the players. I don't know if that's going to be the owners. But I don't think, Greeny, that we're going to end up at a standstill with the positions that we have right now. There's much, much more to this story to come.
Go ahead, Nick.
I think I'm not sure that everyone, I think we all assume that everyone wants the season to happen, but I'm not sure that all the owners want the season to happen, considering how some of them might lose. So I think that the fact that this proposal even exists suggests to me that a group of owners are only willing to take this season on if they get some great gains and otherwise are fully comfortable with not having a season. So we need to consider that as a possibility also. I don't think the same is true for the players.
And Nick, yeah, I think Nick makes a really good point right here. Before the MLBPA comes back with their counteroffer, and I don't even know if I want to call it a counteroffer because they're really not going to acknowledge that initial offer. But when they come back with their offer to the owners, it's going to be very interesting to see the owners' reaction. There's a block of hardline owners out there who think that they're going to lose too much money to make playing in 2020 worth it. Is the players' position going to allow them to convince some other owners to join them in that thought? I don't know at this point, but it's going to be a really interesting part of this story to follow, because if they get more support there and the owners are going to Rob Manfred in the commissioner's office and saying, we don't want to play this season, then the 2020 baseball season then ultimately is really in peril.
I want to remind everyone, Jeff Passan began the week right here on Get Up by telling us this is the most consequential week that baseball has seen in the last quarter century. Now you're starting to find out why. Let's see where it goes. Guys, outstanding. Thank you both. Meanwhile, I want to remind everyone we have a full day here on ESPN. And coming up after we wrap up, it's time for First Take. That's followed by SportsCenter, NFL Live, The Jump. At 4 o'clock, you get 20 minutes of Jalen and Jacoby, then Highly Questionable, then Around the Horn. A two-hour SportsCenter is at 5 with the PTI guys live at 5:30. And cap the day with SportsCenter with SVP. A full day here on ESPN. Meanwhile, as we continue, they were so fired up earlier this hour. We're going to bring back Jalen and Jay. Should the NBA seed the playoff teams 1-16? Who's the favorite to win the title? We'll talk about it all next. Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We are back on Get Up, and the NBA continues to try to work towards a plan to resume their season from what would be a bubble environment at Disney's Wide World of Sports. Sources telling our Adrian Wojnarowski, the league has no current expectation that a decision on a finalized plan will emerge from a Friday afternoon call with the NBA's Board of Governors. We opened the show this morning talking to Woj about all of this, and he suggests that he thinks it's moving in a positive direction. But as is the case during a pandemic, there are always going to be more questions than there are answers. So they're working towards it. And if you were with us earlier this hour, Jalen and Jay Will, we had a really good and spirited conversation about a lot of the issues facing the NBA. And we wanted to bring you back because there's never enough time to talk about all the possibilities here. So let's sort of move forward into this. They're going to work their way into some sort of playoff scenario, Jalen, assuming they can get back and play. What should that look like when they get to 16 teams to play in the playoffs, or 20 to use your plan? What should it look like? What's the best way to decide an NBA champion?
I would love to engage 20 total teams. If I have enough time, I'll do a play-in. If I don't have enough time, I will have it be 10-seeded in each conference, period, and start the playoff. That would provide a easing into the season, almost like preseason and exhibition games, as it should for the top seeds playing against the one seed playing against a 10-seed, for example. Also, 1 through 16, if you can. They don't have to travel cross-country, Jay and Greeny. We need to create more intrigue for the fans. We need to engage more fan bases. We need to see something we have never seen. We would love to see Luka, Ja, Dame Lillard, Zion Williamson. Is John Wall going to come back for the Washington Wizards? By engaging more teams and having a 1 through 16 seeding, you get a chance to see matchups we would never see.
Yeah, let's be clear on what we're talking about there, Jay Will. We brought this up earlier this week here, and that is I have long been campaigning for the NBA when they get to their 16 playoff teams just to seed them 1 through 16. They break them up East versus West, in part because that's the tradition and the history of the sport, but I think more practically because travel is an issue. Well, it isn't an issue when they're all playing and living in the same place. So would you like to see them do away with that and just put the best teams where they are and play it out?
Well, I think, Greeny, if there's one year to do it as an experimental year, it would be this year, in a year that you would have a pandemic. And then I think you would gather all those data points about what the pros and cons of the situations were after you were able to complete the season. And then think about whether you want to incorporate that into the future settings of the league. I think that is the way to do it. Now, I know you can do traditional Eastern Conference, Western Conference, but I think, you know, this year has already been so drastically different. We've had 2.5 months off from basketball. If we're going to do this, even if you do 20 teams, you do a play-in game, you create that mystique, that excitement leading into the playoffs. But I would be glued to my television if I got a chance to see those type of matchups, 1 through 16, just regular seeding based upon what your record was. And let's determine a true champion. I would love to see if it matched up that way. The Lakers, if we're saying that the Lakers, people, you know, general consensus, right? I think the Milwaukee Bucks are one of the best teams in basketball, but I've heard a lot of people say it's the Lakers and the Clippers and then everybody else. Okay, so if we're going based upon that perspective, then let's find a way to get the Lakers and the Clippers to match up in the World Championship. Let's see the two best teams match up in the World Championship, just not be a team that comes out of the Eastern Conference or a team that come out of the Western Conference if they're that loaded.
Yeah, I'm with you. We all see that the same way. Now, Jalen, let me throw something at you here. And I'm thinking back to a conversation Jay Williams and I had one of the last days that we were at the Seaport before, you know, everything had to cease. And I was suggesting that I think there's a team everyone in the Eastern Conference is overlooking. And when our mutual friends at First Take the other day, Jalen, asked me to pick a team that I think could win the championship this year, I said Boston. And I'll tell you why. They have three different players on their team who average 20 points a game. Two of them are very young. They have 10 players on their team who average double-digit minutes per game. I love the way they're coached, and I think that they have a superstar waiting to happen in Jason Tatum, who, if this season had played itself out, I think would have played himself into significant discussion in the MVP race. So if I'm looking for a team, the Lakers and the Clippers are everybody's pick. Jalen Rose, if I'm looking for another team to watch, I'm watching Boston.
Actually, I agree with you, Greeny, and for those of us in the know, that's not a long reach. And here's why. The Milwaukee Bucks, while I respect Chris Middleton, people are still trying to wonder if he's going to be the second best player on the team that can win the East and win the championship. I love how the Raptors, the defending world champion Toronto Raptors, led by Pascal Siakam, continue to outplay expectations. Nick Nurse is my coach of the year. Boston sits right there. Based on all of the things you said, plus they got a young superstar in Jason Tatum and another all-star in Kemba Walker, and they have a Jalen on their squad. So you got to think that they have a chance to do something great.
What do you think, Jay? Well, I was trying to talk you into Boston. I feel like all season long before everything had to sort of go by the wayside, hopefully temporarily. What do you think?
No, I think Boston is one hell of a team, and I do love all their wings. Jay Rose, you and I got into this multiple times, and I think we both came to agreement on NBA Countdown, where we said that the one question mark that you have for Boston is that, you know, if the game were to slow down, like, who would be that enforcer that they would have inside the paint that would be able to have some kind of intimidation? Like, you know, Robert Williams was hurt, you know, Enes Kanter could be that guy, maybe isn't that guy at times. Like, that's always been the one question mark. I love their guard play, but that front line was something that was questionable. That's the only thing I think, Greeny, that would hinder them from winning a world championship.
This is the kind of conversation I want to be having as we work our way forwards. I'm tired of talking about contracts. Let's talk about basketball and all these other games getting back on the fields and on the courts. Guys, wonderful to see you. Thank you. We'll check in tomorrow. Meanwhile, we'll also have more Korean baseball for you tomorrow. That's tomorrow morning on ESPN2. The KT Wiz taking on the Kaiwoon Heroes at 5:25 a.m. Eastern on ESPN2 and on the ESPN app. Coming up, how should the NBA finish the season? We've been talking about it. The First Take crew will follow us at the top of the hour with potential playoff plans. Don't miss it. It's right here on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Domino's. Domino's now offers contactless delivery.
I have never bet on sports. I'm going to give some advice right now. The Lions winning more than 6.5 games this year. We drafted Swift. We drafted Okuda. We got Galladay. The Lions making the playoffs this year. Producer Pete McCombo, please bring me on to talk about football. Lions, Greeny, rah!
Bet going again. The Lions versus the Jets. Who's going to have a better season this year? We know which side I'm on. Jalen, make your case to Damian Woody and let's see what he thinks.
First off, I'm looking in your background and we played you a lot of money to play football in Detroit and I don't see a Lions jersey. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that first. And I know you got the Scarface set up, but you must not see the end of the movie. Detroit Lions. This is easy. The Jets, we have a better quarterback, running backs, wide receivers, top flight D-back we just took in the top five. The Lions will have a better record. But I love Jamal Adams, though.
What do you think, D-Wood?
Jaden, I love you, my brother. Let me school you real quick on this whole scenario, okay? When you talk about playoffs, everything starts in a division, okay? Look at the NFC North division, the 13-3 Green Bay Packers, the Minnesota Vikings who went to the playoffs, and Chicago Bears who, because of the quarterback situation, that played into why they didn't make the playoffs. So you start there. The Jets have the easier path because they're in the easier division. They have, in my opinion, the best quarterback in the division is Sam Darnold, who, by the way, went 6-2 down the stretch last year. Okay, finishing top 10 in touchdowns. What else? Grading, yards per. And, oh, by the way, Jalen, the Jets have a top 10 defense. The Lions' defense, you know what they rank? 31st in the league, my brother. Come on, man. This is easy. The Jets.
We got a suit bet riding on it. Jalen and Jacoby today have DeAndre Hopkins on, which should be very interesting, who has departed, as we all know, from Houston and has not been happy about it. We're looking forward to that. We'll see both of you guys tomorrow. Jalen, we'll see you later today. Thank you all for getting up with us this morning on ESPN. I will see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.